Good morning from the other side of the world. It's a pretty rough topic we're on tonight. Incidentally, a little breaking news. I'm getting word there's been a 7.1 earthquake somewhere near the Solomon Islands. And we are getting a lot of earthquakes, folks. And we're getting quite a few eruptions of volcanoes. The Taal volcano north of us here is in a severe warning stage. And so just all over the world, we're getting all sorts of things that are happening that are not good. Earthquakes, extensive flooding. And in the middle of this, we're dealing with America's worst oil spill by a gigantic margin. There was one other, by the way, even worse, called the Itoxic One. And we'll get to that. And that was also, I believe, in the Gulf. And so there may be some lessons from it or not. I don't know. But something is going on with Mother Earth. You don't have to be a rocket scientist or a geologist to know that something unusual is going on all around us right now. If you'll excuse the phrase, a kind of a quickening in everything. We'll get back to my guest, Larry Schweiger, Chief Executive Officer of the National Wildlife Federation, in a moment. Welcome back, Larry.
Thank you.
You've written a book called Last Chance, Preserving Life on Earth. And that's pretty dire sounding, all right? Last chance. Is it really the last chance? And, you know, why'd you write the book and call it Last Chance?
Well, it's, you know, we're talking about an oil spill here in the Gulf, but, you know, there's this other spill going on, which is that we're adding, last year we put 19 billion additional tons of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And the year before that, we did a similar amount. And the year before that, we did a similar amount. And this year, we're on pace to do a similar amount. Actually, it increases each year. We're headed towards 20 billion tons. But the point is that we're adding all this heat-trapping gas to our atmosphere, and it takes quite a long time, hundreds of years, if not thousands, to purge the atmosphere of this additional carbon dioxide. So we've been altering the chemistry of our atmosphere in such a way that it is causing a very dramatic, if you look at it on a time scale, very dramatic increase in temperature, and that has had a profound impact on profound impacts on important ecological systems, and certainly based on the scientists' best estimates, you know, we're headed to lose 30 to 39% of the species on the planet over the next 40 years if we don't change our behavior. So, you know, it's not, you know, it sounds dire, it sounds outrageous, but in fact, it's you know, it is mainstream science, and it's in the mid range of science expectations.
Okay, you write about natural feedbacks in your book. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what these are and why we ought to be concerned with them? In your book, you talk about a recent trip you made, I guess, to Greenland. And if I remember correctly, Iceland is green and Greenland is ice, right? So what did you see there?
Well, you know, first of all, starting with the Greenland trip, you know, we're seeing a rapid increase in ice melting in Greenland, and it's it's an area that's about 2 miles thick in ice. You know, so if you go to the upper surface, of, you know, 80%+ of Greenland is solid ice, and that ice is melting at a significant pace. In fact, Greenland itself has added now 2 and onward to 3 new Nile rivers to the ocean. So the equivalent of flow from the Nile River is going in, you know, coming in from Greenland. So as I describe in my book, what happens in Greenland will not stay in Greenland. It will affect, you know, island nations. It will affect mega deltas like the coastal Louisiana. It will affect, you know, if you increase the sea level by, you know, 1 meter, you're going to displace about 100 million people on the planet.
So, 100 million people.
Yeah, So, you know, we're really talking about I should also say that our military has cautioned through several reports warning us that that this type of climate change will, in fact, destabilize the world and will cause a lot more strife and difficulty as people are pushed out of their homelands.
That's right. Well, of course. It also could be the precursor to a war. I mean, wars are fought when people begin to get hungry, when people begin to get displaced and don't have land. Wars have been fought over water, and future wars certainly will be. All kinds of things will begin to happen. Well, no, correct that. They're already happening. These things are already occurring. We're in the middle of it right now, and one has to wonder where it becomes too late to turn back. Does it, you know, a lot of scientists have talked about that there could be a kind of a trigger point where the melting produces more melting, which produces more melting, more sunlight absorption, and so forth and so on. And there could be a trigger point where there's no going back. Do you subscribe to that?
I would subscribe to the notion that when you have these patterns that we're seeing, for example, we're melting out the Arctic ice, and you know, scientists are now predicting that within a few years that we will have a complete melt out of the Arctic in late summer season, so-called the summer nadir. And if that happens, you know, we've taken a reflector the size of continental United States minus Arizona, and the surface would bounce light back into space from the reflection on ice, and we've turned it into a energy absorbing sea. We're about 80% or 90% of the total energy coming in is absorbed by the water, and so you've taken a giant reflector and turned it into an absorber. And so that's what I mean by natural feedbacks, and those feedbacks then start to spill over, and we're seeing that already spill over to the nearby countryside, where they warm up the tundra, which has enormous quantities of carbon, both in terms of the ability to produce carbon dioxide and also methane. And we're seeing that start to thaw out and warm up and decompose and give off its own carbon dioxide and its own methane. And we're also seeing boreal forests that used to get so cold in the wintertime that it froze out insects. They're now not freezing out the insects, and we're seeing explosions of insect populations, particularly bark beetles, and they are killing the boreal forest, which add further to the carbon equation. So humans are the primary source of the carbon problem, but they are, by our actions, we're leading to these feedbacks. And at some point, you cross a threshold where the feedbacks are so severe that they will, in fact, cause grave consequences to the planet.
Runaway?
I would describe it as moving from one state to another. You know, we have as a planet, we have lived, you know, mammals and particularly humans have lived in a certain temperature range, and we're going to a different planet. In fact, some scientists are struggling with a new name for our planet because it's not going to be the same same Earth climatic system that we all enjoyed as kids. And I find that to be rather terrifying because, you know, I have three grandchildren, and the idea that we're altering their future, making it more severe, making it much hotter, and disrupting these vast ecosystems that are important for the stability of the planet. It's just beyond description.
Okay, let's get down to it. I believe that there are natural cycles. There are natural cycles. I mean, we all know it. You can look through the geology, the ice cores, all the rest of it. They all tell a story of natural cycles, warmer, cooler, warmer, cooler. So that's an established scientific fact. Now, the big question, of course, is how much man's hand is contributing to whatever natural cycle we're in the middle of. If we're in the middle of a warming cycle right now, how much effect man's hand and what we do is adding to this, how much we should ascribe to natural change and how much we should ascribe to what we're doing.
That's a great question, because if you look at those warm the cycles that you described, at the bottom end of the cycle, when you had a large glacial sheet on particularly on the northern portion of the planet, we had about 181 parts per million or 180 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, roughly at the bottom end. And at the upper end, we had about 281 parts per million of carbon dioxide. And so it fluctuated between 180 and 280 parts per million. And so the historic levels prior to the Industrial Revolution were about basically 280 parts per million. Today, we've added 100 parts per million to the atmosphere of carbon dioxide. So we're basically at 391 parts per million. We're actually much higher than that. And we have not seen those levels probably looking back for about a million years. And we're adding about 2 parts per million per year right now. So we're increasing the pace at which that occurred. When I first started in this field in the early 70s, we're adding about 0.7 parts per million. So we're now about 2.1 to 2.4 parts per million per year. So we're adding 3 times as much carbon to the atmosphere. And that's because China and some of the other countries and the U.S. has added so much more. But we're clearly in a breathtaking race to overload the system with carbon dioxide. And that's why, thousands of scientists now, 2,000 scientists on 4 different occasions over the last 15 years have issued these urgent warnings and have told us to move quickly to solve this problem. And we put our fingers in our ears and start singing la 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 and don't hear. And
okay, so looking back a million years, Larry, you're saying that in cycles over the last million years, it was between 180 parts per million, 281 parts per million at the worst point, and now we're more than 100 above that. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we actually have good ice records going back 800,000 years that show the pattern that I just described, and the scientists have estimated that we have not seen the levels that we're currently seeing for probably about a million years. Clearly we know in the last 800,000 years from the ice record, we know that we've not been anywhere near this, and it's been, we're about 100 parts per million above what we've previously seen. And, we also know that the Earth in the ancient time was actually much warmer than it is today, but we also know that the Earth was very different. It was inhabited by cold-blooded animals and had a lot of ferns and other, vegetative species that handle low light conditions. And, as you heat up the Earth, you put more moisture in the sky and you lower the amount of over time, you will lower the amount of sunlight entering the system, and that ultimately will be the stabilizer that occurs. But unfortunately, the planet will be enveloped in a cloud when that happens. So it's not.
Well, if you go back to the time you just talked about, when the levels were that high, if humans had been on the Earth, how would they have fared?
Well, I'm not sure about you, but I'm not a big fan of eating ferns and that sort of thing. I prefer prefer other crops and other food sources. And in ancient times, the number of plant species were limited because the amount of light available was greatly diminished. Today, we have plant species that can tolerate and in fact thrive in different climatic conditions. So, I think the important thing is that we're moving out of the paradigm that has made all that we know possible, and we're moving into an unknown future paradigm of warmer Earth and much more robust storm activities. And certainly, we're going to be going into a period where we continue to melt ice from the mountaintops and from places like Greenland and Antarctica, and where we lose the floating ice that we once had in the Arctic region. So, you know, these are fundamental changes to the planet, and
very fundamental. Yeah, if you look at pictures of the Arctic from, I don't know, 40 years ago, and look at them now, it's like 40% or better of the ice is gone.
Yep.
It's really shocking. People don't want to see that sort of thing. Anyway, let's go ahead and tackle a really tough one. Just before the big Copenhagen conference, we all know there was a break-in to the data center at the University of East Anglia, releasing, 1,000 emails or something from various climate scientists, 3,000 other climate-related documents. The well-timed break-in, carefully parsed communications documents, and well-crafted attack messages presented a picture of climate change was a big scientific hoax. Now, was this a well-planned and executed cyber attack? Could it be part of a larger effort to avoid addressing an international climate treaty? Did it in fact disrupt the climate conference as apparently intended? Did it disrupt it?
Well, that's a really good question. We did not end up with the kind of outcome we would have hoped for at Copenhagen. So how much of a factor it was is still to be fully understood, but there's no question that someone was spending some serious money to create a campaign to confuse particularly the American public about climate change on the eve of this major international conference. And the interesting thing that since that time, you know, there have been now several investigations of the science itself. You know, when Watergate occurred, we focused on who did the break-in. On ClimateGate, we focused on the scientists and not on who did the break-in.
Have they since been vindicated?
And they have been. And you know, both from a British panel of scientists as well as a panel of independent scientists who looked at Dr. Michael Mann's work at Penn State University. And these studies have been vindicated. The scientists have been cleared of scientific wrongdoing, and the science remains intact. And sadly, that story has not been told, you know, the way it needs to be.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we discover something in science, particularly environmental science, the scientists involved becomes the target of huge pressure. When Rachel Carson proved that DDT was damaging bird reproduction, they attacked Rachel Carson, and she responded by asking who speaks and why. But nonetheless, she became a victim of their attacks. When Dr. Herbert Needleman proved that lead was interfering with children's mental development, he was attacked. They filed an academic complaint against him. He was later proven to be right. But nonetheless, Herb had to spend a great deal of his own money defending himself before an academic attack from those who were being affected.
So have we caught the people who broke in?
No, in fact, there's not been a lot said about them, the question is, who paid for all this? This was not some high school hacker that did this.
Mm-hmm.
This was a well-organized cyber attack. Broke into the email system and into the computers, and then moved the records over to a Russian computer, so that these records could not be, we could not trace who actually did it. And then they were carefully packaged and worded in such a way that people got little snippets that confused them.
Mm-hmm. Gee, I wonder who could have been behind that, Larry. Gosh. All right. We're at another break point, and I appreciate your patience. I wish we could just go and go. From Manila in the Philippines, all these islands. Good morning, everybody. I'm Art Bell, and we will be right back. It is. Good morning from the other side of the world, the island nation of the Philippines. I am Art Bell. My guest is the Chief Executive Officer of the National Wildlife Federation. His name is Larry Schweiger, and it's an honor to have him here this morning. We're talking about all sort of, I guess, environmental issues, and that includes global warming. And I know that's where a lot of you sort of go around the corner and get very angry. And I see that reflected in the messages that come to me, some of them anyway. And it's amazing to me. It's astounding to me. And I guess it's just because of, you know, the possible change that we all face. I mean, it is going to be disruptive. We're going to have to change the way we do things. We're going to have to explore new avenues of energy. And I'm not suggesting the world come to a stop and we need oil between now and when we do it. But, you know, you would think that the present political climate, such as it is, if it's not available for anything else, this disaster, you would think that a president like the one we have now could seize it as an opportunity to say, look, that's it. There can be no more delay. We have to begin changing our energy policies and changing them now and changing them quickly. When we needed something quickly done before, we came up with the Manhattan Project. It can be done. But why aren't we doing it? Why haven't we done it in the past? Well, that's not worth asking. That's the past. Why aren't we doing it now? Why isn't this president seizing the opportunity in the middle of this crisis to push and do what I know in his heart he knows has to be done? And I haven't really heard a word yet about it. Or if I have, that's all I've heard is words. I don't understand that. If there was ever a political climate where it could be done, it seems to me this would be it. Of course, the climate does change, doesn't it? We'll be right back. Well, all right, back we are. And let me put that to you, if I might. Larry, if ever there was an opportunity for a president to seize on a current situation and to actually begin to do what, you know, you and I have been talking about in terms of a change of direction for the country and the world, it seems like this would be it. And I haven't heard a lot about that yet. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think the president has done what the other presidents have said before, and that is the time for a new energy policy for this country. He has called upon Congress to act. In fact, next Tuesday, he is meeting with key Republicans and Democrats to try to see if they can't forge a way forward on an energy and climate policy. You know, the really difficult thing that's going on in Washington right now, I've been involved in lobbying on various environmental issues since the late 60s, and I've never seen it quite like this. The Republicans have decided that they're going to try to block the passage of anything that is brought before the Senate, particularly, and shut down the legislative mechanism. And that's a very dangerous thing to do to our country, because obviously we need to make decisions and we need to tackle problems. And the other thing that's happened is that there's been a, and I say this as one who was a Republican committeeman in my earlier days, but you know, the Republicans have historically had a strong tie to the environment. You know, we've seen it all the way back to Teddy Roosevelt. But today, there is this this anti-environment thread that runs through you know, many Republicans, and you know, that they're having having a real struggle within the party. There are a few Republicans that want to do the right thing, and they're being subjected to enormous pressure from the others not to step forward, not to stand up to tackle this problem. So despite the fact that we've had our worst ecological disaster in the history of this country, they're being pressured not to do anything on the climate and energy policy. So you know, that it's a showdown that needs to happen, and I think that it's time to confront this this matter and have the American public see in daylight what's been going on behind closed doors, and to understand that there are people who are so closely tied to the big oil that they aren't willing to readjust the energy policies in this country.
Of course, but if our president has one thing, he has a pulpit. That's what he has, and I think the American people, whatever else they feel, all pretty much know in their core that things have got to change, and they've got to change quickly. Wouldn't it be an opportunity for this president to use the rhetoric he's so comfortable with to sit in front of the American people and say, look, now is the time. There can't be any more delay. Those who stand in the way have got to get out of the way, or we're all... careful the words I use. We're all in trouble, to put it as mildly as I can. That's what he should be doing.
Yeah, and he, I think that he needs to, he has that opportunity, and the moment is now, and I suspect that that we'll hear more from him, because he's made some pretty serious international promises to cut carbon emissions by 17% by 2020, and you can't do that if you don't have a new energy policy. We're currently living under the Bush-Cheney energy policy, and we can see that that's not working. So clearly he has an opportunity to present a new direction, and I would challenge not just the president but also the leaders of the U.S. Senate to step forward. The House has acted; it has passed a bill to do the work that we need to do to get started, at least. And it's now time for the Senate to act. And I hope that the senators will see their moment and do the thing that's right for all America and for the world.
God, I hope so, too. If not now, then when? I mean, this president certainly has sympathies in this direction, and the opportunity to go to the American people and above the heads of the senators if necessary, and I think it is necessary. I wonder if he is contemplating such a move.
Well, I think it's a possibility, and certainly he's made some early statements, but he's got a team of top scientists gather around him, and I think he needs to unleash his scientists to help educate the public, because the American public has been in the dark on these issues for so long, and because of the confusion that has occurred, deliberate confusion, as it turns out, a lot of people don't understand the dire consequences that we're about to experience if we don't change our ways. So I think there's a need to continue to help the American public understand that this is not only a national security issue, because we are sending, after all, $1 billion to the Middle East each day, and that money helps to, in some cases, helps to fund our enemies.
Mm-hmm. Larry, would you imagine that at some level, and I wouldn't even venture to suggest what level, our own military-industrial complex was behind the break-in?
That's a great question, and
answer.
Yeah, when you look at who is to benefit and who is to lose, clearly the fossil fuel purveyors are the beneficiaries of confusion. And we know that they've spent a lot of money hiring bloggers and have actually hired, particularly older retired scientists to go out and trumpet their confusion efforts. And that's been going on for a long time. That's not something new. So this would certainly fit into that pattern. But I think the key thing here is that that there was not a sufficient investigation of who did the break in and why. And so now we're left with just the
damage, actually.
The damage and the confusion that has been created by this overall effort.
I'm over here very, very close to China. Is China's probably about to become, if they haven't already, the biggest emitter, surpassing the United States, and if they haven't, it'll be soon. Are they doing enough in China to emit less carbon?
Well, the interesting thing about that is that China is now number one, and they've surpassed us on emissions. And that story has been out there recently. But the other thing that's going on that is not out there is the Chinese are now buying up all the wind, solar, and new technologies, and they are going to become the driving economic engine behind the new generation of power in the world. We are letting this industry slip away from us.
I don't get it. I don't get it. So many Americans could be put to work. So many industries could come back to America, and we're going to let the Chinese lead the march?
It's quite stunning. I mean, they're buying our best technologies. You know, our universities developed this technology, and because we have not passed a new energy policy, the companies that got started here in the U.S. are being plucked off one by one by the Chinese, who are, you know, have almost a trillion of our dollars over there. So they're looking for ways to reinvest, and so they're buying our companies and moving them lock, stock, and barrel to China. And the Chinese are going to be making our solar panels, our thin film solar that we'll put on our windows. They're building the wind turbines and developing all these other advanced efficiency technologies that will sweep across the system, the Chinese will be in the driver's seat, and that is to my way of looking at it, a tragedy of huge consequence to us, because we were the country that developed these technologies, and we're now letting them slip through our hands because we've not made the right energy policy decisions.
What happened to us, Larry? What happened to us? We were America. We were the world's leader. When a crisis comes along, we've always been the one to step in and do whatever had to be done. And for some reason, Larry, something happened to America. I don't know what, or maybe I do. It's sad. It's just so sad to me. And here come the Chinese building solar panels, building wind turbines, doing what we should be doing so that we have an economy, so that we have people working again and heading us in the right direction. You know, every survey they do recently, increasingly large numbers of Americans are saying we're going the wrong way. And we are going the wrong way. It's what's happened to us?
Well, that's a really great question, and I think it has to do with the fact that our political system has become so entangled with money. You know, it used to be that votes were important. Now it's the money that's important, and I think we've had a hard time, getting the kind of changes in Congress that we need. I think I would lay this at the feet of Congress. They have, because they have so much money to raise in order to get reelected, to buy the TV ads and so forth, they have become so addicted to these major donations from people who have special interests. And so I think Congress has become a large collection of special interests and not necessarily watching out for America's interest. So, to my mind, the political contributions and the influence that they purchase have really adversely affected our ability to make timely and appropriate decisions.
Is this a case where our democracy is doing us in?
Well, it's interesting because the big corporations have figured out how to play the game, and they've played it very, very well. And now we have a Supreme Court that just recently ruled that the corporations are essentially people, and are able to do what people do in terms of political contributions in terms of free speech and all that. So, you know, with corporations being granted free speech rights, it's hard for me to imagine that this is going to reverse anytime soon. But, you know, America should be alarmed at how much corporate influence is really driving the decision making in this country. And it goes, Eisenhower warned us about that. You know, mm-hmm. we've been warned repeatedly since that time that the that this corporate structure is having an adverse impact on our country. And I think today we're seeing the fruit of that of those investments over many, many years.
Well said. So I guess, so corporations are now people, and they have the right of free speech and so forth and so on. I wonder if, along with that, corporations are responsible, as are individual people, for their deeds. I guess so. But without a sea change in the way we're doing things, and to allow China to march ahead and do what we should have been doing years and years ago, is just plain sad. Because it's going to be a shift in the power base of the world. And we're just letting it happen. It's so sad.
It is so sad. And it's the power base has already shifted. We may not have fully realized it, but the Chinese, we're looking behind us for the Chinese to catch up to us, and when in fact they're out in front of us. And so we're looking in the wrong direction when we look for China. And I think that's. That's just one of several things that are playing out here. The good news about that is that the Chinese are going to deploy a lot of this new technology and will avoid some of their carbon pollution. The bad news about it is that we're going to have to come to them to access some of this technology.
Well, thank God somebody's doing it, but it should be us. It should
have
been us. At least somebody is doing it. So. I guess the Chinese will be exporting all these things, and we'll be buying them, and that will extend what's going on right now, and eventually all the money will be there instead of in the U.S. That simplifies matters, but really that is what's going on. There's a shift it's going to be a shift in who's rich and who's poor, and that's what it's eventually going to be, and we're taking steps, it seems to me, right now to assure that we're the ones, or the United States will be the ones, that are going to be on the poor end of things. And maybe that's the way the world works. Somehow I thought the U.S., with its Constitution, its Bill of Rights, all those wonderful things that we tout so much, would keep us on the right track. And in fact, it seems to have led us in the wrong direction. Listen, we've got one more hour coming up, Larry. I wonder if you would be willing to answer some questions of callers, that sort of thing.
Oh, sure. Terrific.
Okay. Do you have another book planned? And how long has this book been out now?
Well, the book came out in September, and at this moment I have another book in mind. I don't want to announce it yet, but clearly I've seen a lot since I've written a book, and there's plenty to write about these days the incredible spill and some of the additional changes we've seen. But I think I might take a larger look in terms of how we're treating the biological diversity of our planet, and not just in terms of what we're doing climatically, but what we're doing ecologically as well to the planet.
Indeed. All right. Stay right where you are, Larry. And when we come back, we will do as I suggested. We're going to open the phone lines. Listen very carefully as we come back. They'll give you the numbers. And it's your chance to talk with the Chief Executive Officer of the National Wildlife Federation, Larry Schweiger, from Manila, in the Philippines, all islands. I'm Art Bell. Good morning, all.